So, Birdo, House of Dragon, Game of Thrones.
So, is it House of Dragon or House of the Dragon?
House of the Dragon, you're
right. Okay, because, no, but I heard House of Dragon. Someone was calling it House of Dragon.
Some people are calling it Hot D for House of the
Hot
Dragon.
Hot D.
You know, because Game of Thrones, G-O-T. Let's just call it Hot D.
Hot
I kind of like that. Kind of gives it a 2022 flair to it. A lot of people asking us to make an episode about this. While I was watching it, I was thoroughly enjoying it, but I didn't remember that a big part of our early audience
came to us
because of the Game of Thrones episodes that I made back in the... Before there was 90 Day, there were my deep dives on the Game of Thrones characters. So let's get into it, Birdo. Psychology of Hot D or House of Dragon or House of the Dragon. What do you say, Birdo?
Let's do it.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and a professor, and my favorite characters are Tyrion and Brienne of Tarth, the Sapphire Isles.
That's great. My name is Humberto Castañeda, and you know, let's settle this once and for all, because I keep seeing comments in YouTube, comments about like, oh, what does Humberto do and stuff? It never changes. I say it every time.
Totally.
I train foxes. Mm-hmm. And my favorite characters, I miss classic Arya Stark. Prior to season 7, probably. Arya Stark, she was one of my favorites. And classic Jon Snow.
Okay, so rating, Birdo. How many Birdos out of 10 would you give it?
If I'm averaging the whole series, I would give it a 5. Season 1, 2, and 3, I would give it a 5.
Season 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah, the first 5 episodes were season 1.
Oh.
Then they gave me a weird season 2 and then a weird other season 3.
I see. Passive aggression. I like it. My rating is 10 out of 10. I loved it. I loved it just as much as I like Game of Thrones season 1 through 6 is what people will say is the best time of Game of Thrones. I didn't hate season 7 and 8 as much as other people did. Rotten Tomatoes, Birdo, critics score. What do you think they gave it?
Okay, critics went really high with it. I'm going to say 96%.
Close, 93. Audience. Okay.
Audience went insane with it. They went 97%.
83.
Oh, interesting.
So let me read you some one-star reviews on Rotten Tomatoes from the audience.
Okay. Bro.
Acting of the young actors just remains so unbelievable. What do you think about that, bro?
I did not have that. I don't know if they mean specific actors. I didn't have any problem with the acting.
I thought the acting was...
Acting, for me, was not my issue.
Yeah. I thought the acting was superb.
Yeah.
They say CGI is overused.
I will say some of the flying scenes were oddly Harry Potter 4 or 3-ish or something, which was great at the time. But I was like, it doesn't look so great.
Interesting.
Some of the dragon flying scenes.
Huh. I mean, I didn't think that at all. Mm. I liked how the beginning of the season, you don't really see the dragons that often.
Right.
You see them more and more as time goes on. I mean, you can't get away from the fact that the story revolves around the dragons.
Absolutely.
So you have to have dragons.
And I loved having dragons. It's just if I was grading the CG of the dragons, I'd be like, they looked really cool by themselves. When there was a rider on them, I had some issues.
It's really hard to pull that off. You know,
have you tried holding on at 10,000 feet above ground?
Well, you have like a 10-year-old. When Aemond, by the way, spoiler alert for the whole season.
Yes.
When you have Aemond getting on the
massive
big
one.
Yeah, the big
gigantic
one.
Gigantic one.
And he is almost shaken off and he's holding on. It did have a sort of a Harry Potter feel because it's like, oh no, I'm about to fall. But then he doesn't. But honestly, how do you show a scene? Like, you have to show something. And also, dragons are, I'm guessing, some of the most complicated things to animate, right?
Because
it's a living creature and it's got all these moving parts and it's unbelievable to begin with because it's this giant creature in the sky. So if you're just going to make a CGI four-legged animal, it's probably a lot easier. You know, like that boar that came in. I'm pretty sure I know that was a CGI boar, right, that came in.
Right, but that scene looked pretty good.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like to do a CG boar in the middle of the night, not that hard to pull off, but dragons flying around, it's hard.
I thought the dragons themselves looked very cool. I liked all the differences and stuff. By the way, it's Game of Thrones, so here's how you handle that scene. The little 10-year-old boy falls tragically to his death because he can't hold on to the big-ass dragon. That's what happens in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, not in the actual story. I mean,
no, but
this is based on... all right, another one-star review. Real Game of Thrones fans will know how disappointing and so much injustice the show does. Man, these people have some grammar issues. Worst show of the year. Real. So what do you think about that statement? Because there's a lot of people saying this, a lot of negative. Real Game of Thrones fans will know how disappointing and how much of an injustice. So not only is it real Game of Thrones fans,
yeah,
but it's an injustice.
Look, I was trying to find reviews that were not positive that would sort of agree with some of my complaints. I, on YouTube, I can't. Like, everything's like, best show, flawless, redeems Game of Thrones. I can't find it. I'm sure they exist. They're not popular, apparently. So, yeah. I definitely don't agree with worst show ever or anything like that. So, I don't get those.
Yeah.
Not only that, I didn't read the books, and as far as I'm concerned, this is miles better than the last season. And yeah. I know you liked the last season. I'm saying I still like this better than the last season.
The last season with me ages worse and worse as time. I don't know if I'm just being swayed by all the hate, but and I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. And my tagline on that is that I had heard at the beginning of season 7 that they just had one season left to wrap up the story. And they said, well, we got to do 2 seasons. And so when I heard that, I'm like, yeah, there's no way you're going to wrap this up in one season. And the other thing that I thought was, well, you have to wrap it up somehow. And you can't have the show go on forever. Plus, you're getting further and further away from his books and more speculation, right? And more fan fiction-y. So yeah, you should probably wrap this up within a short amount of time. Plus, I don't want to be watching this show for the next 15 years. Like, I'm waiting for George Martin's book.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I knew going into it, which is that there's a possibility that when George Martin releases the final 2 books, that fans are going to hate those even more. Because his last book had all sorts of weird things about it that aren't very, I don't know, they're not in line with the original 2 books. The first, especially the first book, it sets up this whole storyline, right? And you can kind of see the plot developing over the series. But George Martin has this sadism, or even towards his readers, I think. I don't know, but he always wants to subvert expectations. And so there's all these weird things that end up developing, and storylines that don't really add up, and storylines that he just drops. Like, Sansa just becomes kind of a non-issue. Mm. And as an author, why would you do that? Like, people want to know what's happening with her. We pick up with, like, Jane Poole. And so when I
it's
was...
It's like he gets bored of his own character.
I don't know. Or he's trying to make it too realistic, honestly. Because... In the real world, things meander and things don't have tight little storylines. And so with the TV show, I'm like, what are these guys going to do with the final couple seasons? Because, and the other thing that I was worried about, that I sympathized with them about, was that the whole tone of Game of Thrones is everyone who you want to have get their justice. You know, you want Arya Stark to win.
Right.
George Martin continually sets it up like they might win, but then they lose.
Yeah, viciously.
Hard. You know what I mean? Yeah. Eddard Stark, you're thinking, okay.
He's the protagonist.
He gets killed. So how do you turn it around? Or do you? You know, is George Martin, at the end of the books, is everyone going to die?
Well, the one thing, if I could have fixed one thing, is I wanted the winter and the devastation of the White Walkers to be massive. Like, people driven way the F south, and the huddled masses, the remaining humans, the last bastion, the ultimate sacrifice, and they find that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yes, agreed. Because that whole thing was wrapped up very, very quickly, as if it didn't really matter in some ways. Another bad review here. Somehow, a black family walking around in an all-white world is somehow normal, and and no one gives a crap. What do you think?
It's the whole, like, it's like those people. I'm calling out my brother here. So I was watching Ant-Man with my brother, and he had not seen it. I really like Ant-Man.
Yeah, me too.
And at the end of the movie, I'm like, what did you think? He's like, it was great. Although, the lasers really threw me out of it. It's like, lasers? Yeah, the bad guy, when he shrinks, now he's like shooting these lasers and he doesn't run out of battery power for his lasers. And I'm like, well, sure, but like every one of these damn movies has lasers. And the lasers are where he drew his line in the sand. This seems similar to that. It's like, we're okay with the fact that there's, you know, dragons and people don't get burnt by the heat if they're Targaryens. All these things are fine. But if we don't have the same racial problems that we have right now, then that's it. I'm calling it quits.
Yeah, I mean, I think another veiled racism about these kinds of comments is that in their mind, there's just no possible way for black people to exist and have power. And it's ahistorical because it's so hard to look at history or even look at other cultures without imposing our current understandings on that, right?
Are they aware that this is not actual history?
Well, that, but even if it was, you know, there were kingdoms and there were lords, people of color, as we would call them today, but they wouldn't have said it back then. And they ruled and had scholars and kingdoms and armies and technologies and ships and money and trade. And
by the way, it's just as, it's the same as saying, it's like, oh yeah, Lando Calrissian runs a city. I don't think so. Like, come on, what are you talking about? Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. What did you think when you saw black people cast on the show?
Well, I obviously I'm always very happy when I see a bigger, broader range of people on the screen, right? On TV and movies. Also, I didn't know that Valyrian, I knew about Valyrian steel, but I didn't know anything about the Valyrian house and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, oh, cool. Now we get to find out a little bit more about that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And at first I was confused. I'm like, wait, was there a Valyrian house in Got? And not in that show, right?
No.
They had, I guess we might find out why, but so yeah, I was happy. The fact that they were black, look, it's a fictional world. I don't think the Targaryens are immune to fire, which by the way, why does the baby not burn?
They're not immune to fire.
Why does the baby burn?
They're not immune to fire.
They're not? Because she survived the fire. Right?
You mean Daenerys?
Yeah.
So,
and he survives the flames when she shoots the dragon flames and he flies right through it.
So there's it's unclear, one, how that exactly works. Two, it's more that they're resistant to fire.
But Daenerys was burnt by real fire.
So I've watched a lot of videos about this and read a lot of analysis about it. And from my memory, some Targaryens seem to be resistant and some, maybe one or two, maybe Daenerys seem to be very resistant to fire, that kind of thing.
I see. Fair enough. Point still stands. There's magic in this show. There's so many unreal. There's dragons. What am I talking about, right? There's dragons.
Yeah.
So I don't need realism. It's fine.
Yeah. Now, I will say that when newer shows come out and they seem, you know, the term online is race swapping is what they'll call it, right? Or gender swapping. You have a character that was traditionally in the 50s, a white male, and suddenly it's a black female character in the updated movie or the reboot or something. And I think that it's a good effort. It's valiant. It's important. Representation is important. And the fact that, oh, geez, we don't have a lot of material in the comic book universe that involves non-white men. You know what I mean? So if we're going to have superhero movies, we have to start making some adjustments or at least cherry picking those characters that happen to be people of color, you know, and women. So I applaud the effort, but sometimes it does feel a little shoehorned in, if you will. You know,
It would have. So if it had been like, hey, here are our compadres from the north, and all of a sudden the people from the north are all of different ethnicity than what we saw in Game of Thrones, then I'd be like, okay, that's not what I remember from the show. Here they introduce us to a brand new race of people from the ocean and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, great. You know, I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this is a wonderful example of it, that you have to figure it was some thought of, well, we need to have, is there any chance that someone or some family in this story could not
be white?
Could not be white. Is that possible?
Right.
And of course, George Martin is closely connected with the writing and the producing of this show. So he signed off on all that, and he's the genius behind the whole thing. And so I think that they pulled it off extremely well. Yeah. Anyway, another bad review here. All white men in the show are weak or evil, and the black characters are good and noble, but the black men are subservient to women or they are gay. Really, the show is just as woke as Rings of Power, yet based, you know, the Lord of the Rings. Yet basically all the critics bashing Rings of Power are eating it up and praising it and basically turning a blind eye to its woke feminist ideology. Berto, what do you think?
It's obviously they didn't watch the show because that's bullshit. First of all, there's only one redeemable, say, moral character so far that I saw in this season, and that was the king. And he was a white patriarch, the definition of the white patriarch. He was the only, like, actually good, decent person from throughout.
But this person would call him weak.
No, he survived 18 years with a vicious, decrepifying disease that would have killed anyone, and kept the kingdom together and kept it, you know, fantastic. And as soon as he died, the whole thing falls apart. That's how strong he was. This guy was so strong that when most of his skin had fallen off, he could still amble up to the throne and make everyone bow the knee. No. And number one. Number two, like the women in Game of Thrones had the same issue. Like, that's been the theme throughout. It is absolutely a patriarchal world. In that way, it absolutely is trying to copy feudal history of Europe. I mean, come on. So sure, we didn't have actual dragons and things, but that aspect is tried to be represented in Game of Thrones. This isn't new to this show. If you want to complain that Game of Thrones has that problem, sure, that's our history. That's the bit of our history that it is representing. So, yeah, I don't know.
Now, I will say, I don't agree with these bad reviews at all. People are entitled to their opinions. I don't think they're entitled to their racist, sexist opinions. But I will throw out there that there's a possibility in 20 years when we look back at this that it'll look a little of the time in some of the direction of what this person is saying. In that, because, like, for example, for me, growing up, I always wanted to see Asian characters, more Asian representation. And it was so rare. The very few times we were represented in TV and movies, we were ninjas or foreigners or the enemy in a war movie or, you know, some background character or something. And so, and even then, I was happy to see my people represented. As people started to actually include us, the very first characters that we played, Asian Americans, were these very noble, wonderful, all good characters. They were never the villains. They were never the nuanced characters, the gray, you know, in the gray zone characters. They were always like these great, redeemable, wonderful people. And at the time, I loved that because I'm like, whoa, Asian Americans on TV, great. But I didn't notice at the time that that would look silly. And then so fast forward 10, 15, 20 years, when I see those depictions, I think, well, that's kind of silly. Like, it makes us into a one-dimensional. It's almost like they feel bad for us. It's sort of a pity, placement of people like me.
Right.
And then as we get more acknowledgement and white America wakes up to the fact that not everyone is white, even though it's never been the case, then we will see more gray Asian characters. Whereas, you know, today when I see a bad guy or a nuanced character that's Asian, a complicated character that's Asian American, then I'm like, okay, great, we've arrived. And so my point is that when looking back at this show,
not at this show, that's the thing.
But I'm saying I don't see that now. But
right.
Is it possible that in 20 years, when we look back, there might be some of that? And in 20 years, the issue of nuance for people of all backgrounds is even more represented in the future, and this current representation will look of its time. I don't know.
But see, this is the so I would agree if this was the show where the women characters are the super badass ninja assassins who can beat up all the guys, and the three heroines are the women and everyone. That's not this show. The women characters are wives that nearly die in every childbirth, who can't step up to any of the guys because they will get killed, as evidenced in I think the last or one of the last episodes when Damon almost chokes her you know, just for saying something he didn't like. And they're not special, you know, they're like, oh, they're the only ones that can ride the dragons. No, they're not the only ones that can ride the dragons. They're not even specially better at it or something. I mean, there was that one, the one that was, that had the largest dragon, but guess what? The other little blonde kid stole the dragon just fine and can fly it just fine. So, no, that's not this show. This show has women, very flawed, nuanced characters. The heroine of the show is not a great person. Like, she basically, like, starts on a very bad lie and then continues to, you know, have kids with whoever happens to be guarding her, and is still hungry for power no matter what. Like, these are not those unnuanced, simple. So in that regard, I give the show and the writers credit. That's like, okay, you know, now it is true they're still being represented as suppressed from having a full, fulfilling life and stuff, which is true. And that is very much looking at the historical aspects that they are borrowing from. So even though they're not borrowing the racist aspects, they're definitely borrowing the sexist aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, let's go into the psychology. What do you say, Berto?
Let's do it.
So, Berto, if Lord Laris Strong were to motivate the listeners to become a patron of the podcast, what would he sound like?
Since there's like 50 characters in the show, which one is that one?
The foot fetish guy.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I have to talk to you about something. And, you know, I have some information that might be interesting to you. If you want to show me some information, maybe in the lower part of your body, I could make it worth your while. Let's just say that in theory, I could send some nighttime envoys to register you as a patron and contribute a lot of money to our... Ooh, to our... There. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Oh, God.
Can you turn a little bit that way?
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That was effective, man. I don't like you looking at my feet. Okay, psychology. Let's talk about King Viserys I. So what could you say about his character, his psychology, his attachment, his upbringing, his development?
Right.
What could you say about him?
I got the sense that he felt a bit of guilt for having been chosen over his sister, right?
Cousin.
Cousin, but some amount of guilt. And therefore, I always felt in the first couple episodes especially, a little sense of imposter syndrome. Like he felt a little bit like maybe he wasn't supposed to be, but he still kind of projected an outward appearance of confidence. But I sense that, number one. Number two, he was very susceptible. Like he was a very caring person for his family, but as a result, he was very susceptible to wanting to appease the entire family. So there was that. And then lastly, I think that his relationship with his brother was very complex because he both really wanted to love his brother and be family, but he felt threatened by him, rightfully so. And so that was always this push-pull. So yeah, I don't know what all that says about him, but I felt he was portrayed as an effective king mostly. You know, the place was in peace, the kingdom was held together, but at the same time, very swayed by the family dynamics.
Yeah, it's funny. As you describe it, I'm like, yeah, I guess he was a pleaser. If you really just wanted to summarize him up in a sentence or even a word, it would be King Viserys I, first of his name, and the most pleaserest pleaser that's ever been pleasing in the Seven Kingdoms.
What a pleasant king.
Yeah. He really wanted people to like him.
Yeah.
And he really wanted his daughter to approve of him, right? As a way of doing penitence for what he thought to be a... Now, so I knew this at the time, but you've more recently watched the show. When he makes that call, King Viserys, mm-hmm. that his wife is going to be cut open and die, she was probably going to die anyway, right?
The way that what do they call him? The maester told him that there was a good chance they were both going to die.
Right.
And so, of course, he could have tried to just like kill the baby and then try to take it out, but that doesn't mean she lives. Like, you know how it is. Like, she could bleed to death. So he thought there was a good chance they were both going to die, and so he decided to try to save the baby.
Because as I was thinking about this before recording with you, I thought, oh, you know, he had to choose between his potential son and his wife. But I'm like, well, not really. He just had to make this really tough choice. We could see someone making a choice like that today.
Of course. I mean, to be fair, the choice was let it play out and maybe we'll get lucky. Or this isn't going to go well. Let's try to save the child. And they might still both die. Mm-hmm. And he tried to save the child. That scene, by the way, I love it. I mean, as you know, sad as it was so well done.
Like, yeah.
He's there with her and you just feel the pain in her body.
Yeah.
And
it's I don't think I've ever seen...
Oh, God.
I mean, I'm sure I have, but I can't remember ever seeing a movie or TV show that depicted that element of pregnancy.
Yeah.
As well. Because often in TV shows, movies, we're outside, right? Yep. We hear the screaming. There's the close-up on the sweaty face of the mother who's, you know, pushing. But we're mainly outside with everyone else. We're in the world of Rhaenyra,
yeah,
as she's giving birth. We're in the world of Emma as she's giving birth.
Yep.
And even with Lena Valerian, that, just by the way, that scene where she decides,
oh, she's the one that burns, right?
I'm going to go out with dragon. I'm going to go out, yeah, at, you know, at, with a Valerian death. I cried. I burst into tears. Anyway, yeah. King Viserys, the psychology is that he was raised during the most peaceful time of the Seven Kingdoms.
Right.
He was raised during King Jaehaerys's reign. I think they even call it like the Long Peace or something. It's really, really long. It's decades. And he was also not groomed to be a king. He was the son of a second son.
Yeah.
Son of the second son of Jaehaerys's father, the previous king. Anyway, point is that he's raised in a family where he has all this privilege and he doesn't have the pressure and no one is grooming him. No one thinks he's going to be king. It's
right.
Just not going to happen.
So he's not been prepared for it.
Yeah. And so he apparently was raised very well because Jaehaerys is his grandfather and he is free to think the way a human is free to think. And he can focus on family,
right,
and his daughter and his wife and on happiness.
Yeah.
He could enjoy his wealth. He, you know, in the books, he's described as this party animal who just drinks and has feasts all the time.
By the way, so what books are these? Are this like some of the books of the Game of Thrones series that they hadn't included?
Yeah.
And they just go in flashbacks to the past?
Well, I can't remember everything, and I don't even really remember what happens because it was a long time ago. But the premise of this one book, and I can't remember what it's called, is that there's a maester in Old Town, you know, that
yeah,
tower,
right,
where Sam ends up, right?
Where he ends up studying. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's going through all the old books, those tomes, and piecing together, I think, 100 years later or something. And he's trying to write a history of that era.
Okay.
And so he's pulling from accounts from different scribes. And of course, each scribe is biased or has their own point of view.
Oh,
similar to the way we will write today. You know, when we try to piece together Julius Caesar,
right,
and his life, we're relying on a few different historians of that era who wrote potentially 100 years after the events happened. And maybe there was one that was there at the time. And maybe you have these, you know, letters of Cicero that are still,
yeah,
around at the time before the great fire of Alexandria, you know, that kind of thing. And so this maester is piecing together. And this is why, you know, George Martin is such a history nerd, that because this is what he does.
Yeah.
He reads these accounts of real historians of the past trying to piece things together. And so it's explicit that the book is written from someone who's an unreliable narrator themselves, because they're also interpreting through a modern lens what they're reading. So an unreliable narrator whose their sources are unreliable narrators.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of dry account of what happened. It's not a very exciting book in that way, you know, because there's not a lot of dialogue. It's just like, and then this,
and
happened,
then this happened,
and then that happened.
It's more like the Silmarillion.
King Viserys the First was known to be very into feasts and drank a lot. And the beauty of this show is that, because George Martin's involved, is that he's like, well, let's actually flesh out what really happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, for example, that one on the small council when Sir Criston smashes that guy's head into the table, that guy who dies, Lord Beesbury, in the books, we just know that he died. And the historian, the guy, the maester writing, he's like, sources are unreliable as to how he died.
So now we know how he died.
Because George Martin gives us a view into that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so King Viserys the First, he's raised in a time where he's free to think about his family and his daughter. And he might not have been in the inner circle because he doesn't really know how things actually work. You know, I've been reading all these analyses as to like who is to blame for all this. And to me, reading all the analyses and thinking about it, it's King Viserys. He's the one, he's to blame for this whole thing. You know, you can say, oh, it's obviously Alicent, or oh, it's Otto Hightower, or it's Laerys, or it's Aemond, you know, all the people that are portrayed as sort of the evil people. But really, everyone was telling him, the realm will not stand for a woman on the throne. So if, and King Viserys knows that. He knows that to be a fact. And he does not, and so he names Rhaenyra his heir, who doesn't actually, she's not desperate to be his heir. You know, at least she doesn't really show that. She's more just really angry at him for what she thinks, that he killed her mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, but okay, so fair enough. So he didn't do that. But you know how these things go. So let's say he had said, oh no, it's going to be my son. My son's my heir. His brother wouldn't have stopped being his brother and wanting the power.
But that's another problem. And so when we get to Otto Hightower psychology, I'm going to break down how the show is so brilliant, because the way they portray it, it makes you feel like King Viserys is the good guy, especially when we look at it through our modern eyes, because through our modern eyes, we're just like, well, of course Rhaenyra should be queen. Why not? Right? But this is in a world that is of a particular time, you know, it's similar to a particular time in history, in European history, in which that was just not done. You know, that's a part of history when women became queens of kingdoms back in the day. It was a bit of a thing, and sometimes it resulted in civil wars and a lot of people dying. Through our modern eyes, we're like, well, women can be just as good, if not better, than men can. But when you consider how the realm is sexist,
you know? Well, no, but I mean, we've never had a female president, so it's not like through our modern eyes that's any different, right? But from his eyes, even within the conceit of the show, he only became king because the rules were broken. He wasn't supposed to be the king.
Right. But so here's the thing. If he really wanted to make Rhaenyra queen,
right,
he should have done so many more political things.
Sure.
All he did was demand that everyone bend the knee to her as the heir. That's something which we saw when, you know, towards the end of the season, when they're like, okay, who's going to go against their vow? And a couple of people are like, I'm not going against that. You know, so a vow is important to some people's honor and integrity, but obviously not that important. And again, Viserys would have known that. And so what he should have done is, if he really wanted to make Rhaenyra the heir, he should have done so many other things. For example, he should not have had other children with Alicent.
Yeah.
Do you know? Or if he did, he should have sent them away or something, you know?
But
or,
he was
and not
manipulated.
Allowed, and not allowed Alicent and the kids and Otto and others to garner power as he's about to die. Like, there were so many, if he was really interested in Rhaenyra actually being queen and actually succeeding, he just didn't do anything. He just completely neglected the whole job.
That's true. I could see that. At the same time, like, he was manipulated when he lost his wife, directly manipulated to fall in love with the other gal, right? And so it's like, okay, so he should have known better, but, you know. And he was clearly, his brother was going to be a problem no matter what, even if he had been setting things up. In fact, it might have been worse, because it ended up being sort of like a diffused situation.
Yeah. Well, what he should have done, which is what Otto Hightower suggested, which is that he should have married Rhaenyra to Aegon. because that would have solved everything. And yeah. I know in our modern eyes, that's disgusting.
No, they do that all the time.
But they did it all the time. Yeah. In fact, they kind of gloss over the fact that Viserys and Emma, his first wife, they're related.
Yeah.
I think they're cousins or something. Yeah, yeah. It's totally within the norm.
Well, didn't they marry Aegon to his sister?
Yeah. So Aegon marries his full sister eventually, right. Anyway.
Right.
So Rhaenyra is his half sister.
Right.
Now,
was very confusing for me because at one point the guy with the eye patch says, "Well, I'm the next in line, but Aegon's got kids."
Yeah. So Viserys was clearly not made to be king. He was made to be a fun dad. Mm. A pleaser, fun, loving father.
I mean, think about it. A president nowadays at most is like 8 years. This guy ruled for how many years? Like 30 years or something?
But you could argue that from the moment that he got locked in on Rhaenyra,
yeah,
from that point forward, the Civil War was inevitable, which means, and we haven't seen it yet, but
yeah.
But spoiler alert, a lot of people die because of his choice.
I don't know. I mean, yes, I see that. And at the same time, I'm like, but I don't know. Like, the guy was sick for most of that time, yet kept things together otherwise. And now it's after his passing that everything's going to go to hell. I don't know. Maybe.
But don't you think you're looking at it from, especially the way that it was written, the show is written?
I am. No, you're right that
Viserys is a likable guy.
Look, but fair enough. But by that logic, and maybe you would agree, we could say that Eddard Stark was a bad ruler.
He was. Right? Right. Eddard Stark was an idiot.
Right.
Because he, and I've watched a lot of analyses on this too.
Yeah.
He should not
have told Cersei.
Yes.
Yeah.
He goes to Cersei and he tells her that, look, your children are bastards and I'm going to tell your husband, and we all know what he's going to do. He's going to want to kill you and the kids. So I'm giving you a chance to get out of town. Anyone else would have said, Eddard, that's great that you want to do that. That's very noble of you. But guess what's going to happen? Cersei, here's the possibility. She already has power. Tywin isn't going to let that happen. Tywin is massively powerful. They are going to somehow figure out a way to get rid of you or to marginalize you or something. And then you either have to completely just lie and say that, oh, sorry, I never said that, so that you can bend the knee to Cersei, or you're going to have to rise up and your house is going to have to rise up. And guess what? Civil War, everyone's going to die. So be smart. Go to the king right now and tell him and beg him not to kill his wife and children because you don't. But it's the king and it's his choice. And because if that happens, so Eddard Stark goes to the king, and how that'd be horrible. Tommen is a good little boy.
But
say he goes right to the king. The king's like, what? The king gets the queen and the kids. All four of them die. Okay, maybe he even somehow gets, you know, Jaime and Tywin.
Well, and then the Lannisters start a war anyways.
That's just one house. It's not the entire kingdom at war. You know what I mean? So
I mean, sure. But at the same time, there was a whole lifetime. He was in charge of the North for a long time. His family did very well. And then he made a tragic mistake. It doesn't make him a bad ruler or person, certainly.
I'm not saying he's a bad person. I'm saying he's a good person. But
and he was
in the Game of Thrones, Berto, there is no place for good people.
See that you're looking at that through our modern Netflix viewing eyes.
No,
no, because if it was
think about the spider, the Master of Whispers.
Yes,
he made some tough choices sometimes.
Yeah,
for the realm, meaning I don't want everyone to die. If that means maybe taking this person out, assassinating them before bad things can happen, then that's what it means. I'm trying to protect the realm. The right thing to do, of course, is to tell Cersei so she can get the kids. Tommen is innocent. But when you're trying to preserve the deaths, now, if I were Eddard, I would like to think I would do what he did because that's how I want to live, but I don't live in that world.
I could argue, though, and maybe that example is very specific because I would agree. I'd be on the side of like, dude, I get where you're going with this, but that is a terrible mistake. So I agree with that, right? At the same time, without the
people... It's a terrible mistake to go to Cersei.
Yeah, exactly. At the same time, the people in history who maybe in the end got themselves and their whole family killed, like the Bravehearts of the world, those are the ones that have shaped what's good about the world today. And without them, all we would have is examples of the most ruthless and bloodthirsty people. So you can say that at the time, maybe they did something that got them and their family killed, but they forged a better future in the process. That example notwithstanding, I would say maybe that example is a bridge too far.
Or if... I never thought of it. I've heard anyone even float this. Maybe someone has. The best thing Eddard could have done, if he really wanted to stick to his integrity, is plan, scheme, and get his men and figure out some way to lie to Cersei and her kids to get them rounded up by his men and get them out of the city or something, out of King's Landing. And then at the last moment, he turns to them and says, okay, you have a choice. You can either flee, because there's a raven heading to the king right now from me, or, and live, you can flee and you and your kids can live, and there's a ship right here, take you to the free cities. I have money, you're set. Or you can come back with me and we'll see what happens once the king finds out that those kids are bastards. You know, maybe that would have been better. Would
maybe.
Have potentially averted
maybe.
A civil war.
Maybe, unless Robert Baratheon goes insane and it's like, you let them escape, I'm gonna kill you.
Well, fine, then yeah. Then Eddard dies yeah. and the rest of the realm yeah. doesn't go to civil war. Yeah. Anyway.
Fair enough. All right. But getting back to this, your point is well taken that in the end, there was a lot of inaction on the king's part that did lead down a dark civil war-y path.
Yeah.
And I agree. I can see that. At the same time, I also see that he held the kingdom together for many, many years, even through terrible illness.
Well, one would also argue, in fact, what is argued in the books by the maester, I believe, at least the way it's told, is King Jaehaerys built the peace
yeah.
that King Viserys coasted on for a while and then destroyed utterly through his through his lack of action and his actions.
But I mean, not over 2 years. It's like decades.
Yeah. Well,
so I'll take decades of peace.
Yeah. So, and then that one scene where he's talking to the Hand, Strong, and he's like, how will they remember me? As a king,
yeah.
because he's thinking he's going to die soon. I have to say, I can relate to that. I'm not yeah. a king, but I do think about like, huh, well, I'll be dead one day.
Right?
Will anyone remember me? And if they do, what will they say? What will be the obituary?
You know? He wasn't ruthless enough.
You know what terrifies me? It'll be like, noted 90 Day Fiancé watcher. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, more stuff. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about incest after the break. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right. We're back from the break. Let's talk about incest. Something real, yeah. real light and fun.
My sense is that in this world, genetics from incest don't really seem to affect things, right?
Well, it is sort of potentially suggested. And George Martin,
oh, really?
I think, tries to sneak that in. That
okay.
the Mad King, the one that Jamie oh, okay. Lannister was the Kingslayer of, right? The one with all the fire.
Yeah.
It's who knows why he was quote-unquote mad, but it's possible it was from all the inbreeding.
Okay. Because, you know, in actual history and the Spanish houses and other places, there was a lot of inbreeding. Mm-hmm. They were very, very sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just died very young with tons of complications mm-hmm. and diseases.
And mental problems.
Mental problems, everything, yeah.
All right, so incest. Also, young people becoming betrothed, you
yeah.
know, like the suggestion of Aegon and Rhaenyra getting married, or the young Lena marrying Viserys.
Right.
All that kind of thing.
Very, yeah. Very young and like just promised, you know, like, okay, you two are going to get married.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, on one hand, when I'm watching, I'm like, well, one, this is the world.
Yeah.
And two, that was history.
Yeah.
So there were children, young infants that were betrothed to people.
That's right.
It's not like the rom-coms of today.
No.
Where, you know, you meet someone.
Meet cute.
You have a meet cute at 25 and then you get married. And it just turns out that he happens to be rich. You know, that kind of thing. In this world, even among peasants sometimes, these things were arranged.
Right.
Because the farmer down the street happens to have a cow. And so you want to get in
Don't
good
call
with that
his daughter a cow.
You want to get in with with that family. It was about survival, right?
Yeah.
And so for us watching it now, we of course agree with Viserys. It's like, well, don't marry Lena. That's a child. Don't marry Aegon to Rhaenyra. That's not a rom-com. But either of those decisions would have been better than what he did in those situations,
right,
by the way.
But they also kind of break their own fourth or fifth wall, because there is that whole scene when she's sent on a tour to try to pick a husband. And that seemed, it's funny to say it, but it seemed anachronistic in its own weird way, because she wouldn't, number one. And number two, she was talking as if it was a modern teenager saying, like, that kid, I'm not going to marry a kid, and or that guy's too old, right?
Yeah. I can see that. If someone had that, did you have that criticism as you were watching it?
At that point in the show, I was loving every minute of it, so I didn't, but I'm just kind of thinking about it.
Yeah. I don't know if that was unprecedented in European medieval history.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, where there would be people that would come to court trying to propose that you marry this person. And it wasn't like they were going on dates. It was just like, I come from this particular house and I would be able to bring my assets to the crown or whatever. Anyway.
I was also very confused why the snake's son wasn't the first thing someone suggested, because that seemed like such an obvious pairing.
Well, if I remember right where they were in the story, it's because Viserys turned Lena down.
Yeah.
And
they were a little upset about it.
They left.
Yeah.
And they were not open to discussion after that point. Yeah. And so by the time Rhaenyra wanted to marry someone, that tie had been broken. But it does raise some questions, Berto, because when I hear the criticism, I'm like, well, people, you don't understand the world and you don't understand history. You're looking at it through modern eyes. Mm-hmm. But it does raise some questions. Rhaenyra and Daemon, right?
Yep.
On a certain level in this world, normal, if they were to have what they had. Even right. Early on when she was a teen and he's much older.
Right.
But do you think Rhaenyra was exploited by her uncle? Because if exploitation happens, it was happening, then we could say that that's harm in any society, right?
Yeah.
So was she exploited by Daemon?
I do think in the scene where... So, okay. The only evidence we see early on is that moment with the necklace, and you're like, wait, was something going on here? There is a chance something... There was already some sort of a relationship, but I really wrote it off as like, not quite, but there's obviously some tension here, some sexual tension. When he takes her to the club, in my mind, he was absolutely trying to manipulate the situation. And it didn't go exactly how he thought it was going to go, but he still tried to manipulate the king. Because I was like, oh yeah, well, he's trying to literally just impregnate her and make himself... reinsert himself into the fold. And then when that didn't work, he still went to the king and said as much, right? He's like, yeah, that's what happened, and you should marry us.
Interesting.
So in my mind, he was absolutely using her at that point, even though to her it was more like a, ooh, this is kind of an interesting sexual awakening thing.
That's not how I read it. I'm sure a lot of people agree with you when you say it, but the way I read Daemon, honestly, is that he's suffering from something. Whether it's feeling inadequate or his own rejection feelings or wanting his brother to accept him. He's suffering from something and he's searching for an answer. He's searching for self-esteem.
Sure.
And I also see him as someone who, when it came to Rhaenyra, that he did have some fondness and maybe a minor crush. I think it was clear that Rhaenyra had a crush on Daemon.
Yes.
And I think Daemon might have enjoyed that crush from her. Maybe when she was really young, he was like, oh, that's cute that she likes me. But as she started to get older, I think he might have started to be like, huh, I think maybe I have a thing for her too.
So far, so good.
So I didn't read it as Daemon was only playing his cards.
Not only, but if you see what, like, you know, he set this whole thing up, so, you know, made it so she found the little secret passageway, then knew exactly where he was going to take her to, like, get her in just the right kind of mood.
But you could argue that, and I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just saying you could argue that he knew she wanted to have an adventure, because she clearly did.
Yeah.
She's an adventurous person. You could also argue that he wanted to bond with her as a niece, maybe not even as a lover. But when I say it out loud, it's like, well, they quickly transition to lover stuff. So.
And I still think he was trying to have sex with her and impregnate her.
Right.
And he couldn't because he was having psychological issues that prevented it.
Yeah.
But he still basically tried to manipulate the king.
Interesting. So, and I wonder if that's what they were actually trying to say. I mean, that's one of the things that I loved and disliked about the show was that they didn't spell things out.
No. And in those first five episodes, I loved how the heroine is like really shady. Like, I loved how basically it wasn't simple. It was like, wow, it's kind of hard to know who I'm rooting for, but in a good way. Like,
yeah.
Everyone's so messy and she's not good here. She's lying. She's manipulating. And he's even worse. And then this is, I liked that.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah. Because you read it as he was trying to impregnate her so they would get married. And when that didn't work, he just goes straight to Viserys and says, let me marry her.
And says, we had sex, and you should marry us.
Right. Yeah, I guess that makes some sense.
And that's why, because Viserys believed him, that's why they gave her the tea. They didn't have any idea about the other sexual encounter.
Well, so was Rhaenyra exploited? Was she harmed sexually?
Oh, was she harmed sexually? So I don't know that there was anything that happened prior to that. I don't know. There was that moment with the necklace, but I don't know.
I think the implication was there wasn't.
So in that sense, I would say no, but she was being manipulated. And again, I'm going by the morals of the show at the time of the show.
Yeah, yeah. They're not completely divorced from our current understandings of things.
Sure. Know? But if an uncle took an underage niece to a sex club and tried to have sex with her today, I would have a very different statement.
Right. But some of the elements are still present in this world, whereas he's older and has more power. He's a man and has more power. She clearly has no idea what she's getting into.
Yeah.
At no point does he stop and say, hey, we should talk about this because I don't want you to do something that you'll regret later or something.
At that moment, actually, if I remember right, she was an adult. They called her an adult.
Right.
So I would say, even by the show standards, I think he was using her, manipulating and using her. But by the show standards, I wouldn't necessarily say that he sexually damaged her.
Okay. Why not?
Because she was definitely into the relationship. She liked him. She had a crush on him. They got as far as kissing and heavy, breathing.
Yeah, I mean, I think and I hadn't thought about this until we started talking, until you just said that, but I think a strong evidence point is that she goes home and she's like, I'm not satisfied.
I need this guy.
Who's the first guy I think will do? Right. Oh, well, my bodyguard, he's right outside the door. I mean, literally the first. I mean, I think she also had a crush on him.
Yeah.
But she didn't cry herself to sleep in a fetal position.
No.
She was like, ooh, I think I like what my uncle introduced me to. Let's have some more of that stuff.
Now, if we knew that this had been going on for years, well, now we have a different explanation to why she might have that reaction.
But I don't think that was...
But that wasn't seemingly implied.
Was Alicent forced into sex slavery?
That's the queen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so now, even by the standards of the reality of the show, I do think Alicent's dad definitely manipulated her nastily, but was she forced into sex slavery as much as a lot of the other brides in that reality are? So by our standards, absolutely, but not by the standards of that reality.
Was Emma a sex slave?
Which one's Emma?
King Viserys's first wife that died.
King Viserys. Oh, right. Let me put it this way. No one in their reality would stand up and accuse the king of hey, that's not okay.
So what are the societal rules present in that society that made it that much different than us today?
Basically, certainly women in that society didn't have much in the way of say, right? Like if the father says this is what's going to happen, and it seems like that's what was going to happen. And there were no compunctions about hey, here's my 11-year-old daughter, I mean, you might wait to have sex with her for a couple of years, but here she is. That seemed to just be the norm.
Well, and an explicit conversation with Emma And with Allison, is the job of a wife is to have children.
Right.
Our battlefield is in, I can't remember what she said, but in the pregnancy room.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are here to produce heirs.
And that's so real. Like, you know, I remember thinking how my grandma had five children, and that's not even that many by older standards, but it was quite a few children. And I just thought, man, that's a lot of years of giving birth and raising kids. And that's what your reality is, and cooking the meals. And that's like just raising these little humans, let alone when you're Henry VIII and you're like, more children, I need a male, more, more, you know? It's just, yeah, that's all you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so to them, that is their job. That is what they see as their destiny. It's like, yeah, mm-hmm. I need to just produce kids, hopefully males.
That's their entire worth.
Yeah.
And I think that given our current way of seeing these sorts of things, I think it makes what I believe to be the biggest point of the first season a little lost on maybe the audience, which is that Rhaenyra is this massive feminist character who has sex with who she wants to have sex with. She does what she wants to do. She's the direct opposite of Allison. And Allison is not abnormal. She is society. Allison is every woman in the society at various levels of society, if not at every level. Rhaenyra is the only one. And the reason why, and I think this might be somewhat strongly hinted at by George Martin, is that the lore is that the Targaryens, their people from Valyria, originally had children with dragons. And so all the Targaryens have dragon blood in them. That's why Viserys II with Daenerys was don't wake the dragon, you know. And why potentially they have fire resistance, this kind of thing. And potentially also why they're very violent and not very stable emotionally, because they're sort of an abomination.
I see.
You're not supposed to mix dragon with humans, you know.
Right.
And with women, they're the same. Women Targaryens have that as well. And dragons are proud, powerful creatures that don't take shit from no one. Right? And so even though the society is trying to make you into a subservient lady, you have the inner dragon within Rhaenyra that is saying, no, I'm not going to be that way. I can't do that. You know, I'm too angry about it. You know, I want to do my own thing, and I want power. And when you're Daenerys, and this was lost, I think, on the fans as they're watching season 8, is like inside Daenerys, and they were hinting at, and you and I talked about this, especially in the books. There's tons of hints that Daenerys was planning early to burn King's Landing to the ground. And so when she does that and doesn't have a lot of justification for it, well, she's wanted to do that for a long time. Plus, Targaryens are freaking ruthless. They have a whole history of killing and all sorts of horrible things. I mean, Harrenhal, you see that depicted in, you know, where the Strongs are.
Yeah.
And that is an even bigger keep. And Aegon burned that thing to the ground and didn't have to, really. I mean, did you get that point? I think that maybe as I'm saying it out loud, it's pretty obvious, but did that point really shine through? Because like when Allison pulls the dagger and tries to kill Rhaenyra, that is that conflict. That's the central conflict between the women who have to suppress who they are and give in to the sexism of the society, and Rhaenyra just doing whatever she wants to do and getting away with it.
Yeah, I definitely got that, because it was like, why does she hate her friends so much? It's because it's like, wait, why do you get to do this? Well, you got to have sex with that dude, like that good-looking young dude? You're not supposed to do that. What? And so she was like so puzzled and upset that she would just do whatever the hell she wants. So I got that. What is also puzzling, though, is that in spite of doing all that, she's still giving birth to how many kids? So she's still giving birth after birth after
Rhaenyra?
Birth. Yeah, Rhaenyra. Yeah. She's already got 3 with the one, plus 3 with the uncle, right? So it's like six Damon. Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them died, but yeah. Now two of them died.
Well, she's the heir. She has to have kids.
Right. But that's my point is that even though she's rebelling against the system, she still has to pump out kids. Nonstop.
Well, one could argue, and we didn't see anything explicit around this, that she wanted to have those kids. She chose to. With Harwin Strong, the guy she was having sex with on the Kingsguard when she was married to Laenor, she, I think, wanted to be with him. She liked him.
See, that is similar to, in my mind, saying that, like, well, you're putting the, I think she wanted to do that, but did she have a choice? She didn't really have a choice.
Well, we don't know. I guess that's a good question. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it.
She was trying to give birth to heirs. That's true. She didn't maybe need to do three of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, it certainly did seem like in the beginning of...
It's not that they have contraception, right?
Right. It seemed like at the beginning of the season, and I think she even says something like this. She's like, I don't want to get married and have kids.
Yeah.
I want to do something else. Yeah.
And one could argue that the time spent giving all those births and training all those kids up and all these things. But here's, because one of the things that I noticed was in the early episodes, we were promised a little bit of an arc of how she was going to be this great leader and sort of almost like a military tactician maybe, right? But then we don't see any more of that development. And now she's queen, and everyone around her is the one with all the ideas and knows how to do stuff, especially Damon. And she's like, okay, yeah, I guess we'll do that, and I guess we'll do that. Because she never got a chance to develop any of those skills. Mm-hmm. Because why? Because she's been giving birth for over a decade.
Yeah. So this is emulative of parts of our society now and in our history. For example, when the women's movement to vote, the suffragette movement in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and it predated that, but that's when it was really strongest. It's often portrayed as women marching, advocating for the vote, that kind of thing. But many women opposed women being able to vote.
Yeah.
So it's similar to the Alicent Renera dynamic.
Right.
In that you ask yourself, when you look at that, you're like, well, why would you as a woman, and why would you develop into political groups of women that are opposed to you having a voice, to you being able to vote?
Which happens today. It's happening as we speak.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. The hypothesis that people operate from, the model of understanding, is that, one, when you're a woman and you're born into a sexist society, it's not like you're thinking you're outside of society. You're in society. You're being indoctrinated.
Yeah.
It's not like they teach boys how to be sexist and then they just forget girls. They teach everyone to believe in the sexist paradigm, which is that women are stupid. Their menstruation makes them unable to be stable over time. You know, all the lies that keep up the patriarchy. And so when the choice comes along for women to have power, the internalized sexism kicks in. It's like, well, of course we can't be in power because we're lesser.
Right.
Men are better. We are worse. Plus, when you look at society and you don't understand systems, you're like, well, women are bad at everything. Women aren't as good at working. Women don't earn as much money. You know, men are smarter than us. Well, it's like, the reason why is because the system keeps women down so that they can't ever achieve anything. The other element to this, which I think is a little bit more sinister, and if for you 90 Day Fiancé people, I have a hypothesis about Jenny and Sumit. So Sumit's mom, it's an Indian family in India. It's a very traditional Indian family. So the divorce rate in the United States is like 50%-ish. For first marriages, it's somewhere around 38%, 39%. Mm-hmm. Probably. But in India, what do you think the percentage is of divorce?
The percentage of divorce in India is 20%.
1%.
What? 1%?
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's a very different
That's
society.
Crazy.
Very different.
Yeah.
Not Christian.
Yeah.
Very different. And so one of the elements that on this 90 Day Fiancé show is that you're seeing is that, so Sumit is this Indian fella who falls in love with this older white American woman.
Uh-huh.
He's like 30, she's like 60, something like that. And the family is complete, and it's been 10 years. They've been together for 10 years, this couple, in love. The parents of Sumit are against Jenny upwards and downwards and backwards and forwards, and Sumit and Jenny have jumped through all the hoops and they've tried to do everything. And the parents, particularly the mom, are just like screaming. You know, the mom is threatening to kill herself on camera.
Oh my gosh.
And it's serious, right? If it were fake, it wouldn't last for 10 years, you know?
Right.
And a lot of people in India are like, yep, that's not the way everyone is, but that's totally the way that it is.
Wow.
And so my hypothesis about her is that when she was young, she started to want to do something else with her life. Maybe, I don't know if it had to do with marriage, but some kind of box that she was being shoved into as a woman.
Right.
And she came to a Y in the road. It's like, I either go against society and listen to myself, or I completely suppress who I am.
Mm.
So it forces oppressed peoples into that decision. They either believe in themselves and hold on to themselves, but suffer the massive consequences, or they have to kill themselves on the inside. They have to kill their free will. They have to kill who they are.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like at the end of Harry and the Hendersons, is just like, get out of here. I hate you. You know, you have to drum up anger at your own self. And you have to tell yourself, you're stupid. You're a stupid, frivolous girl for wanting something different. No one else does this. And you're selfish, just like your parents are saying.
Mm-hmm.
You're frivolous, just like any other woman. And you're stupid. Mm-hmm. And you just beat yourself into submission, right? And then eventually it works and that side of you wins. And then someone else comes along, your son, for example, and just does whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
And
you're like, what? You can't do that.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
I had, you know, like an analogy is one of the weirdest aspects of my profession is that novice clinicians in my field are not paid. In fact, interns have to pay money to work as a clinician for the first year of their practice. That's absurd. They are doing actual billable work,
right,
at agencies. Now, it's not the agency's fault. It's the taxpayer fault for not allocating taxes to pay for the whole system such that we can pay interns. But at the same time, it's still a practice. And what I think that in the medical field, there's things along these lines as well. I think also in the food industry, in kitchens, if you're a novice, you know, food prep person, you get all the crappy work and there's all a lot of hazing. That kind of, and the thinking is, it's like, well, if the only people that are going to overthrow that system are the people in the system, but everyone in the system who currently has power has already gone through the difficulty and they don't want to let the new people off the hook. I had to go through that. I don't want to let them off the hook.
This happens in other industries too, you know, where same thing, you see a new person coming into your field, and because of inflation or because of changes in the market, whatever, they start at a much higher salary than what you started as years and years and years ago. And guess what? You get salty. You say, what? No, that doesn't make sense. And then you resent that. You want them to have to start down because you had to start down. So you can't skip steps.
Right. So Allison had to give up who she was.
Right.
And she's watching Rhaenyra get away with it. And consciously, what she's thinking is, Rhaenyra is a bad person. But unconsciously, she feels, oh my God, I made a mistake. I could have done something different. Look at Rhaenyra.
Right.
So it forces oppressed individuals into an impossible scenario. Yeah. They either have to attack themselves and attack freedom, or suffer massive consequences from society for having that freedom. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're running late. So I kind of want to just race through my notes here. All the chatter about the season was you had the good guys and the bad guys, and Rhaenyra and Viserys and Daemon are the good guys, and Otto and Alicent and Laris Strong, you know, whoever else is in that camp, are the bad guys. The Lannisters are the bad guys. And I'm like, to me, I pull all of them toward the middle a little bit more. I don't think of Otto Hightower as a bad person, and I don't think of Rhaenyra as a good person. I don't think of Viserys. I think of Viserys as a good person. I think of him as a really bad king, like an extremely irresponsible, really ignorant king.
I would agree that. So one of the things I definitely like about the show, and especially the first five episodes, is that you can't easily say, "Oh, that's a good person," almost of anyone, right? And I like that. But you can say things like, well, I don't know, the guy was delirious and you're the only one who heard it, so come on now. And you can say that, well, she really had the throne supposed to be hers, so it's true that they're all morally ambiguous. They're all still murderers and, you know, and blah, and they just really want power, and they're all the oligarchy anyways, and they don't really care that much about the little people. That's all true. But,
yeah.
But within the conceit of all those things, she still has the rightful claim.
Rhaenyra.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, she absolutely does. And power, so this is another problem I have, even just when people are talking about contemporary relationships. People are like, oh my God, that person is so controlling. All they think about is control. They're just so obsessed with power. There's a reason why we as individuals psychologically want power. Do you know why that is?
To not die.
Right, safety.
Yeah.
Power means safety. The more control you have over your environment, theoretically, the better able you are to, you know, engineer your environment so that you and your people will be safe. Alicent is explicitly yelled at compassionately by Idle Hightower as he is being fired from the hand of the king. You have to fight, because if you don't, when Rhaenyra becomes queen, her or her people will kill you and your children. So you need power. You need to fight for power. Otherwise, you will die and your children will die. Is that what you want? I don't want that. You're my daughter. I love. He hugs her with compassion of a father.
Right. But what I'm saying, though, is that even in Game of Thrones, the Game of Thrones series, the good people in that series were more good by our standards. Like early Daenerys, you see her actually like wanting to help the little people and wanting to give alms to the poor. And you see Jon Snow is like such a pure character. Whereas in this series, which is, again, one of the things I like about it, it's like no one's like that. The only thing they care about is, sure, their self-preservation. Not a single one of them has ever made any comment about, but what if we helped the people of the King's Landing a little bit more? Like, that's not been a conversation.
Yeah, as very much emphasized when Princess Rhaena burst through the floor of the ceremony as
killing,
Aegon,
like,
killing, I don't know,
600.
On the low end, 79 humans.
Yeah.
And no one blinks an eye. The show doesn't even blink an eye.
No. Because that's not the point. They're no ones.
Yeah.
The main thing is she didn't burn alive the royalty.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you, I'm sure people hate me because I am not voicing popular sentiments, but I'll tell you, I'm rooting for Rhaenyra. I was rooting for Jace. I want what's his face to win. Jace. Luke is the one who ate it, right?
Yeah.
I don't like Aemond. I'm on the fence with Daemon even.
Well, Aegon's a complete
Aegon.
Aegon is a complete horrible, even by the standards of the show and the time. He fights little kids, many of them his own sons. He brutalizes women and basically doesn't care that they get killed by his mom.
Yeah.
Like, he's a beast. He's worse than Joffrey. You know, he's like a Joffrey on steroids.
Or Joffrey, if Joffrey was allowed a few more years.
Yeah, maybe. I guess you're right. So he's horrible. So I am definitely rooting for the people that are less horrible.
Yeah. So I'm absolutely rooting for Rhaena. I have been from the beginning. I'm still kind of pulling for Sir Criston, kind of, because he seemed like a good guy in the beginning. I really loved Viserys. I really loved the actor who played him, actually. But I'm just saying that if you look at the facts on the ground, it's extremely complicated. And there's a case, and that's what's so great about the story, is that if I was in Otto Hightower's shoes, I don't know if I would have done anything different. I would like to think I wouldn't pimp out my daughter, but everything else he did, every decision he made, the suggestion of Aegon and Rhaenyra getting married, the decision to tell the king, by the way, my spies saw your daughter and Daemon having sex in the brothel. If this, I'm your hand. One, I need to tell you this. Two, I'm your friend, and I don't want you as a father to learn this the hard way. And three, if you're really interested in Rhaenyra being the heir, you don't want her to be doing this kind of thing.
I do think that was surprisingly dumb of him, because I agree with you on almost everything else, is that his character, even though the marrying off the daughter and stuff, but he's played it initially in the first episode, they made it seem like he was really like deceitful and kind of evil, but he wasn't. He was literally just trying to play the game that is meant to be played. I thought it was really short-sighted that he would go tell him directly. What I thought he could have, should have, would have done is have the king find out in a different way.
But
insulate him.
And that's why I think, because everyone's trying to like match it up. Daemon is like Jaime Lannister. No, he's not. You know, they're saying Viserys is like Ned Stark. It's like, no, he's not. Viserys is more like Tommen. If Tommen actually became king, he would be like Viserys, an ignorant, dumb, nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, Rhaenyra is like Daenerys. It's like, well, no. Alicent is like Cersei.
Yeah,
no.
None of the characters are any of the characters.
Well, Alicent's more like Sansa. If Sansa actually, you know.
But that's, I find, look, there's a crap ton of characters in the show. By the way, that is one of my complaints. Game of Thrones had a real crap ton of characters. You could have had the same conversation just within Game of Thrones. Sansa is Cersei. But they're not. They're all individual, distinct characters.
Yeah.
Now, I did think one of my big complaints is Game of Thrones had a long time to pace out the development of the characters.
Yeah.
They crammed a lot of characters into this season.
Yeah. And we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But with Otto Hightower, I would say he's much more like Eddard and Stannis.
Sure.
Than he is like...
More like Stannis, if anything, yeah. Maybe less ruthless, but definitely.
They're trying to make him out to be like Littlefinger or Tywin or something.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, and I feel like... I don't know if the directors and the writers of the show did that on purpose. Like, they're like, well, we'll kind of direct it in a way to make Otto look like Littlefinger, but when you really think about it, he's more like Eddard.
Well, there was not... See, I never saw a single aspect of him that was Littlefinger-ish. I always thought it was more like, okay, he wants power, he wants the thing. I never saw him as Eddard, to be fair, but when you said Stannis, I'm like, I could see that. The only difference is that Stannis is brutal and ruthless. This guy is not. He's actually not. He is not, in my mind, he's nowhere near as brutal and uncompromising as a Stannis. He's not. He's just someone who wanted his family to have power, manipulated the king at a very vulnerable time for him, and that's about it. The rest of the time, he's playing it kind of by the book.
Yeah.
So like, he's not the one who said, hey, here's what we're going to say. We're going to say the king told you that you're... No. His daughter comes to him and is like, here's what the king told me. Now, it's true he was already planning a contingency to like usurp the power, but it's not clear they were going to go through with the plan.
I'm going to rattle through what I liked and disliked. I was fine with the time jumps. So I've talked to two different camps of people, like super fans that love the show, super fans that happen to love the show. I think maybe some super fans don't like the show, but for those people, I can relate to them. And for us, so let me tell you what I had to do to enjoy the show. I had to watch every episode at least twice, and I watched a dozen different YouTube channels breaking down every single episode. After every episode aired, I would watch it twice or three times because there's so many little things happening that I don't pick up on at first. Then I watched 10 half an hour long YouTube videos breaking down every episode. And even then, I was still missing some of the things that this show was just blasting past at a lightning speed. But because I did all that, I really enjoyed it. Now, most people are not going to do that. They're just going to watch the show. And as I'm watching it, by episode 3 or 4, I'm like, man, if I wasn't watching this show the way I'm watching it, I don't think I would enjoy it because I wouldn't really connect with the nuances that are happening here. One. Two, the show has no hero. Like in the original series, in the books, you have Jon Snow, you have Tyrion to some extent, you have Sansa, you have Arya, you have Eddard. In this season, you have no one like that. And that makes it hard for casual fans that aren't super into the world. Because, I mean, I was talking with someone who was, you know, almost all the way through the season, and they're like, so yeah, does this happen after Game of Thrones? Is like Jon Snow dead already? Like, that's what most people are like. Yes. They don't care. They're not looking online about the whole thing. You know what I mean? So for them, they're just like, yeah, I was a little slow, which I could totally understand. But because I love the show so much and I'm reading into and I'm really trying to put myself in each character's shoes because I'm inundated with all the data, I can still relate to the characters. But if you didn't do that, I could see how you wouldn't. Now, what I think is going to happen is that season two, we're going to start having characters we're going to relate to a lot more deeply. Rhaenyra being one, Jace being another, Daemon being another, Alicent being, I think we're going to, this whole season, I think they're like, look, we have to race through a lot of history to get to the Civil War. And I saw this interview with George Martin. They were debating as to, well, where do we jump in on the story? We want to tell the story about the Civil War, but where do we start? And George Martin wanted to start with Aegon the First. He wanted to go back to the very beginning.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, let's not do that. And then they thought, well, how about we start with the moment that Luke gets killed by Aemon? How about we start there, you know, and the dragons? And they're like, well, but we need backstory on them. And so they kind of compromise. And I think in the compromise, they're like, well, we only have so much money and time. So that means this first season is going to have some, you know, extreme time jumps before we actually get to this. There's a good chance the second season will have no time jumps, maybe some flashbacks, but no time jumps. And I was totally fine with that, but I could see how people would be put off by that. So I'll just say that. The other thing I'll say is I love the writing, and I also loved how they managed to have women and people of color in the show, and it felt totally natural. There was no inclusions of diversity, if you will, that seemed shoehorned in. It all seemed totally natural. And it's all a matter of what you focus on, right? So they want to focus on women more, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what their intentions were, but they did. They're like, well, what was it like to be a woman? What was it like to be a queen? Well, it had to do a lot with pregnancy. And so from Emma, that's what we heard from. We didn't make Emma into a fighter who could kill people. We entered into the life of a woman. Yeah. We got to know what it was like for Rhaenyra to bump up against that, you know, we enter Alicent's world, okay? We don't make Alicent into someone who can do flips and, you know, all the kinds of things you see.
Magic witch.
Yeah, something like that. You just enter the world. Don't make them into things that don't seem to fit the world, you know what I mean? Now, I want to say that if we're making a show about science fiction like Star Wars and you want to make a woman into a fighter, you can, obviously, because it doesn't break the world, because the world is literally and boundless because there's all these races and it's a different situation. But this is trying to adhere to historical feel, if you will, you know. The other thing that I kind of didn't like at the same time was that it did go too fast to me. There were so many little things that I wish were more fleshed out. I wish that Daemon was a little bit more fleshed out in his motivation, because his character is pretty focused on, but at the same time, I'm just like, and I still don't really know, like when he tried to strangle Rhaenyra as she was talking about the Song of Ice and Fire, I'm like, did you know why he tried
to? Well, the reason you're feeling that way, which I agree, is that they spent 5 episodes on season 1 and only like 1.5 episodes on season 2. And then another 2 episodes. Like, this is the problem for me, is that the first 5 episodes were fantastic. I was loving it. And Daemon was a very clear character. And I was really getting what he was after. I really got his motivations. I saw what he was about. And when, after the 5th episode, it ends a little weird, because in the end of the 5th episode is when all of a sudden, you don't know what's happening. There's a brawl. And then Sir Criston
kills Joffrey.
Yeah, he goes so over the top and kills him and brutally murders him. And you're like, okay. And at the time, I was watching it with my wife, and she was a little like, wait, what? And I justified it. But little did I know, because the next episode starts, and I was like, wait, first of all, who are these people? Because she doesn't look a lot like the young version.
So here's another part. Here's another part of my world being different from yours and everyone else's, uh-huh. which is that I have been watching news releases about the production of this show yeah. for years.
Yeah.
A couple of years, maybe especially the past year. I knew.
So you knew they had two different.
The actors. I knew the two yeah. actresses who were going to play Rhaenyra.
Right. So I don't have any of this context. So,
so when
I'm
they
watching...
made that jump to the next actress, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go.
So I'm watching a scene. There's no like little, you know, 10 years later.
Yeah.
There's just a scene with a different blonde woman having a different child. And I'm like, now my wife knew because same reason she had read or whatever. So she's, I'm like, do you know who this is? She's like, yeah. Should I know who this is? She's like, I don't think you would. I mean, you will, but I'm like, ugh. And then I start piecing it together. I'm like, okay, fine. But I'm unhappy that I don't even recognize the character. Okay, whatever. But then they introduce so many more characters all at once. Daemon becomes a mute character for a whole episode, and he goes from this brash, you know, to this family man, like, with no explanation. And then later, they turn him back into the original Daemon. I just felt the second half of the season was like a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And with very, very boring sequences, like the whole chase sequence where they're trying to find Aegon. Where is Aegon? That was like so slow. I was so unhappy, man. I went from loving the show, first five episodes, brilliant. And they were paced. They were very subtle. They didn't spoon feed you. No, it's totally morally ambiguous. You don't know who to root for. Loved all of it. But the second half, it sped up, and then there's too many characters. I don't know whose kid is who, and why do I care about this? For example, when the uncle, the brother of the sea snake dies, I don't care. I just met him one scene ago. Now he's arguing, and then he gets his head chopped off. I don't care. It's inconsequential. When the middle brother, when the baby that she's giving birth to is stillborn, and it's a horrible scene and everything, but I'm like, I didn't care. I didn't get along. Like, this pregnancy is not something we were following. She already has a whole bunch of kids. Yeah, of course, for her, this is horrible. Anything like that would be horrible. But I'm like, okay, let's just move on because this is like extra clutter right now. There were things like that.
And by the way, that baby, it's theorized, might be a little bit too dragony, and thus.
Oh, interesting. It did look a little dragony.
Couldn't live because of that.
Oh, okay. Now, I will say this. If they had spent the first five episodes, actually stretched that story out for the full season, and what started off as episode six had been season two, and they had taken their time, I think it would have been fine.
Yeah, so when I would watch the episode, I was like, one, primed to know what the yeah. actors, and because Stacy didn't know any of that stuff, she's watching with me, and she's just like, who is that? I'm like, well, I'm like, that's Allison. Yeah. She's like, who's Allison? I'm like, you know, the young lady who yeah. married the king. Oh. So I had to tell
yeah,
her
you
a
had
lot.
To fill in the gaps.
And so for me, I knew it was coming, but that doesn't erase yeah, your experience right. that I had as well, which is just like, so wait, Daemon's now a family man. But I would watch these analysis videos, mm-hmm. and they would speculate yeah. and also throw in other things that were hinted at in the episode that are extremely subtle. Like, there are things when, for example, with Daemon, when we see him as a family man across the narrow sea, and he's teaching Valyrian to one of his kids, and old Valyrian, right? And the things that he's studying and the little accoutrement that people were like Easter egging in the scene points to this overall backstory that wasn't told because they skipped forward so fast, but there was care given to that fact that they haven't explained the past 5 years. And
yeah.
and then these 10 different YouTubers would fill in the gaps for me that felt satisfying enough.
Totally. And I can see that. You know what it is? And maybe that budget is a big deal. With Game of Thrones, the original series, what would have happened is, so in this first season, we see the brash Daemon, and he finally conquers that one, the one
crab beastie, feeder.
Crab feeder, whatever. And then he comes back, but then he has to leave in disgrace, kicked out. The second season, we're not 10 years later yet. The second season, we see parallel storylines with Damon in a different land, rebuilding himself. And that's what would have happened in the, somehow, in the Game of Thrones.
Somehow Lena wins him over to be a family man.
Yeah, totally. And so it would have been paced. Now, even if we were trying to compress it, I think one of the things that is very dangerous is, so George R.R. Martin has clearly hundreds and hundreds of characters, but the Game of Thrones show had the time to develop that. So what I would have done is I would have cut some fluff. I would have said, look, let's have fewer kids, for one. Let's have, and of the fewer kids we have, let's just focus on a couple of them and stuff like that. And yes, time has passed, fine, okay. But let's still keep, like, we just got to know these characters. Because some of the things that I saw happening were, even though 10 years had passed, they show us a scene with the queen, the queen mother. And she's talking as if only one episode has gone by. In other words, she's still like, I just don't think it's right. Those kids are bastard children. Yeah. She shouldn't have. And I'm like, have you been just spouting about this for 10 years? There were little things like that where I'm like, okay, that's a little sloppy.
Yeah.
And so what would I say is, I can understand world building is there, the acting phenomenal, the overall characters and the subtleties is all there. I really wish they wouldn't have crammed so many characters and things in the second half.
Let me throw this out there as a possibility. Let's say season two is amazing.
Yeah.
No time jumps.
Yeah.
None of this stuff, because I think that's what it's going to be. And then you look back at season one and you think of it almost like this, you know, recap. Let me recap you on what's happened prior to this. You're not really going to see the whole story, but it's going to be this kind of real quick rundown of how we got to where we are at by episode one of season two. Could you look back at season one and go like, well, that wasn't great, but at least we got to this, which is amazing.
Absolutely. Look, I think the first five episodes prove that they had an amazing show on their hands with the right pacing.
That they're competent.
Right.
Yeah.
What I would have done, honestly, is start the story at the time that we are at right now. Even though there's all that backstory stuff, I actually wouldn't have bothered with it. Oh, but we needed to know how she was when she was little. No, we don't. We don't.
Yeah, I hadn't
just
thought about
start
that.
It then.
I hadn't thought about that. Or you could have done it in flashbacks.
You could have done a lot
specific,
of yes,
on, like,
specific
if you,
things.
Like, you probably need to know some of the history of Daemon and Rhaenyra. At least you'd be interested in it, I guess.
Or
but
a lot
you wouldn't
of times,
really need it.
You don't need it. And a lot of times the way they do this in a movie, think of like Guardians of the Galaxy. They show us like one little bit where they're kids. So sure, show. In fact, cast someone even younger. That way, because one of the problems too is like she looked young, but she wasn't a little kid. So fine, cast someone that looks even younger. Show me one episode, or maybe even half of the first episode. What happened when she was a girl? The foundational moment that now we need to understand for when she was an adult. Great. But then start the story where it starts, and now take that same pacing, that same great pacing from those first five episodes. Do it for your 10 episodes. Now I'm fine, man. Now I can enjoy myself. One last nitpick is they used the Dark Knight effect from the 70s that we were just talking about in Jaws the other day in episode 6.
Yeah.
And it drove me nuts. Plus, there's a bug in my HBO app on my Apple TV where if I pause for a second, it like keeps the scrim on. So my wife and I were like, why can't we see anything? And then I went online and there were a ton of people complaining about this.
Yeah.
So that's more of a technical problem. Apparently they had a whole bunch of problems when they were filming, because that's some of the first scenes they filmed, and they had terrible weather. So they had to post-process the hell out of it. And it was like, not great.
Yeah.
So look, I am excited for season two. The first five episodes I thought were masterful, and there were bits and pieces of the second five or set whatever that were still very, very good and entertaining. But I hope that in the second season they don't try to accelerate times and things like that. I
don't think they will, yeah, because I know the story outline. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that happens,
yeah,
in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
And you don't need to change any actors, yeah, and there might be a little bit of a time jump-ish, like, you know, 6 months later or something.
By the way, what did she think was going to happen sending her sons on Dragonback by themselves?
Well, the hope was that the diplomacy of it is, because if you're going to win over Baratheons, you can't just send your, you know, your cousin. You send your son, and it's a big deal. It means you care. You know, you'll be insulted if some random diplomat shows up. If your son shows up, it means that you care.
Yeah.
And you really need the Baratheons on your side. You know, there's certain houses that are critical.
That's fair. But you're not sending your son as part of like sort of like a convoy with some soldiers and things. Like, you're sending him by himself on Dragonback in the middle of a storm when you know that there's a one-eyed maniac out there who hates your sons anyways, who's got the largest dragon in the land.
Well, you think that Alicent's team wouldn't do that. I mean, even Aemon himself, the way that they portrayed it in the show, did not want to kill Luke.
Certainly.
So, it, because of the implications, because of what would happen. I mean, one, because it would start a war, and two, it doesn't make House Green look good. You could lose House Baratheon because this happened. Yeah. You know, everyone understands that. It's not like a gang war in, you know, on the streets. You're not trying to waste the other side. You're trying to garner loyalty and from the houses. So you send your son and you think, you're not going to mess with this guy, because if you do, like, game over to some extent.
But succession lines being the most important thing, and you have, he's the heir to the whatever it's called.
Well, I think they have another son, by the way.
No, they have two. They have a son, a daughter. Oh, right. One more son, the blonde. They have Aegon. Real Aegon.
Right.
And which is fine. It's just that these are precious commodities.
Yeah.
And so, and again, the other thing is, you're sending him on a dragon. These aren't like, I don't know. I just felt like, man, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised you lost your son.
Well, like with Rhaenyra and her mom, Emma, they by themselves would just fly all over the Seven Kingdoms, wherever they wanted to go, and would visit places by themselves, no escort. Hmm. So that was kind of the Targaryen way. Yeah. You know, we got our dragons, who's going to mess with us? Yeah. I think it's that kind.
Someone with a bigger dragon.
All right, well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Let us know what you think, and everyone out there, take care of yourself, and please, no time jumps, because
you deserve it.